Chapter 16. Mars Claremont did not consider himself a man prone to emotional seesaws, but he had to admit the last several days had genuinely messed with his head. First, the realization that Cardenia, the woman who, yes, actually he was very deeply in love with, despite the impossible fact that she was also Greyland II, Emperor of the Interdependency, had lied to him. Not in a small way, like that she enjoyed the way he gave foot massages, or even in a large way, like cheating on him with some other member of her court because she was Emperor and who was going to stop her. She had lied in the largest way possible, by entrusting him with an impossible task, a task upon which billions of lives were riding, a task the failure of which would flatten him forever into the dirt, and then withholding the information that he might use to solve that impossible task. It was difficult even now for Mars to convey both the anger and absolute crushing disappointment he had felt when he realized what Cardenia had done and the almost insulting rationale she had given for doing so. Asking Mars to find a way to use the evanescent flow streams to save billions without giving him the highly advanced science that was used to create the rupture was like asking someone to cure a highly contagious disease and then not telling them about germ theory, all the data about which you just happened to have right here in your hand. Cardenia had pointed out that the last time humans had this particular set of knowledge, they had almost wiped themselves out and had ultimately put themselves into the situation they were in today. Mars couldn't argue against that, but he had argued that was then, and the circumstances were different now, and that no one working with that data today would be so stupid as to use it for those same ends. Cardenia had laughed in his face then, and something inside of him had fallen out of love with her in that moment. The two had argued and fought, and Mars said some fairly unforgivable things before storming off to sulk in his bachelor quarters, which were about half the size of Cardenia's personal bathroom. He stewed there for a bit, while Cardenia went off to commune with her ancestors, or whatever it is that she wanted to call what she did in the memory room. Mars had meant to get some work done, but instead went over the details of the fight in his head, playing them over in a constant loop, with special attention given to Cardenia laughing in his face. He expected that the more he ran that moment in his head, the angrier he would get, but in reality, the more he ran it in his head, the sadder and more depressed he got. It took him a good long while to realize why. It wasn't that he was wrong. It's just that Cardenia wasn't wrong either, and she was probably more not wrong than he was. He was a scientist, and frankly not the most astute observer of the human situation. He would never abuse the rupture data like that, and couldn't imagine any of the scientists that he would work with would either. They were busy trying to save the universe, after all. But he had in the moment forgotten that Cardenia was also Greyland, and what she had to deal with on a daily basis. The grinding opportunism and political maneuvering of the world she inhabited, the number of people who wanted something from her or would be happy to take something from her, the depressing reality of knowing that there were people, forget people, entire conspiracies of people, who would think nothing of killing Greyland to get her out of the way of their own selfish goals. Cardenia, Mars's girlfriend, the woman he knew he loved, was sweet and kind and awkward and a little goofy. Greyland II, the Emperor of the Interdependency, could not afford to be any of those things. And they were the same person. When he had said his naive words to Cardenia, it was Greyland who had laughed at him, because Greyland knew better. This realization about the nature of their argument did not make Mars feel better. It made him feel much, much worse. It made him feel bad enough that he knew he needed to go over and apologize to Cardenia, no matter how annoyed he was that she wouldn't give him the rupture data. That resolved, Mars splashed water on his face and was preparing to head back to Cardenia to grovel at her when he received the call from Senia Fundipolonen that Kiva Lagos had been murdered in Otavio VI Park. Mars took the news like a punch in the gut. Mars hadn't seen much of Kiva since he had arrived at Hub and become involved with Cardenia, and Kiva had been busy enough on her own with managing the House of Nohamapitan's affairs and recently with her new relationship with Senia. But Mars looked back fondly on their travels to Hub and the time they had spent together, and he appreciated that she was solidly an ally to Greyland in a time when she sorely needed them. Senia had called Mars because she knew that he was absolutely the quickest way to get the news to Cardinia. The news would eventually filter up to her, but it would otherwise have to go through several channels to arrive on her doorstep. Mars expressed his condolences to Senia and then carried himself through the vast expanse of the palace and arrived in Cardinia's apartments just as she was exiting the memory room. He told her about Kiva Lagos, and then, after they had both stopped crying about that, she told him she was giving him the rupture data. "I honestly can't process that right now," is all Mars could say to that. Kiva Lagos' body was identified via fingerprints and DNA. The death confirmed by the hospital. Her body was, in accordance with her written legal instructions, sealed into a low-temperature transport casket and shipped out on the next available transport to the Ikoyi system. Even Senia didn't arrive at the hospital before the body was sealed up. She had 3 minutes with the casket before it was shipped out on an expedited basis to make it to the "That's Just Your Opinion, Sir," before it disembarked. In a sad irony, the "Your Opinion" entered the flow shoal to Ikoyi a little over an hour after the "This Indecision's Bugging Me," bearing the Countess Huma Lagos, Kiva's mother and head of the House of Lagos, arrived at Hub for a meeting of the house's various system directors. Greyland asked Mars to be her representative to the Countess Lagos, to pass along her private condolences and to assure the Countess that her daughter's public disfavor with the Emperor had been manufactured. Not only did the Countess Lagos not appear at all concerned about her daughter's public disfavor, she also did not appear particularly concerned that her daughter was, in fact, dead. "Did you see the body?" she asked Mars in her daughter's office at the Guild House when he came with the Emperor's condolences. "The body was identified in two ways," Mars said. "That's not what I asked you," the Countess Lagos said. "I didn't see the body myself." "Nor did Miss Fundapalonin. She told me the body was sealed into a casket before she got there. Nor did any of Kiva's staff here at the Guild House see her to identify the body, either at the House of Nohama Peaton or the House of Lagos. The only people who saw her were the emergency technicians who ferried her body to the hospital and the doctors who pronounced her dead when she arrived, none of whom know her." "There were the fingerprints and DNA," Mars noted. The Countess Lagos gave Mars an indulgent look. "Lord Mars, remind me. Are you the pleasant young man my daughter used as a fuck toy on her journey from End to Hub?" "I wouldn't have put it that way, but yes, my lady. She thought highly of you in several categories." "Thank you. But for the purposes of this conversation, I seem to recall that just before you jumped from End, your ship was overtaken by pirates and you were required to pretend you were someone else, which required a fake DNA sample. Is that correct?" "It is. And before that, to get on our ship at all, you assumed a fake identity which required both false fingerprints and irises. At least that's how the story was told to me. Also correct?"
"Yes."
"Well then, Lord Mars, let me ask you again. Did you see my daughter's body? Did you, or anyone who knew her, see her body?"
"No."
"And would you agree that her quote-unquote body was sealed into a casket with unseemly haste and shoved into a passing ship almost as quickly?"
"That was per her instruction." The Countess made a dismissive sound.
"Lord Mars, you are certainly a pretty young man, but I don't think you're all that bright. Kiva has no particular attachment to Ikoyi. She hasn't lived there regularly since she was a child, and our family is neither religious nor holds with any special burial rites. Do you know what I plan to do with my body once I am dead?"
"I do not, Countess."
"Neither do I! I'll be dead, and I won't give a shit. If I'm at home, my children will decide what to do with it. It'll probably be liquefaction, since that's the standard for Ikoyi habitats. But they could prop it up with sticks and twirl my corpse around like a puppet for all I care. If I die on a ship, they can toss me out over the side. And I'm the Countess Lagos. I don't see any of my children caring about it any more than I do, much less Kiva, who you know from experience is not exactly sentimental."
"I do indeed," agreed Mars. The Countess smiled.
"So again, no one saw the body, and it was shipped off with unseemly haste under dubious instruction by people unknown.
and now the ship allegedly carrying her body is in the flow, is it not? I do not usually take sucker bets, Lord Mars, but if you wish to bet me that the ship arrives with that casket still inside it, I will happily take your marks.
So you think Kiva is still alive?
It's more to say that until I can see her body with my own eyes and lay my own hands on it, I find it unlikely she is dead.
Have you told this to Senia Fundapalonin?
The Countess Lagos' face became serious. No, it would be cruel to do so, even though you think your daughter's alive.
Lord Mars, do you love my daughter?
I am fond of her.
But you don't love her.
No.
Senia Fundapalonin does.
I understand.
I'm glad you do.
If that's not Kiva in that casket, who is it and where is she?
I'm not a detective, Lord Mars. But if I were, I suppose I would check to see if any young woman of similar height, color, and build to Kiva has gone missing in the last several days. I might also try to find that ambulance that brought her to the hospital. I have a suspicion it might be hard to find.
I'll have someone look into that, Mars said.
Do. As for where she is, you said that she was working with the Emperor to introduce chaos into the plans of Nadashe Nohama Peten?
That's what the Emperor told me, yes.
Then I assume that is exactly what she is doing.
I hope you're right.
As do I, Lord Mars.
In the meantime, I will pretend in public to grieve over my daughter.
That might be wise, Mars said.
How long do you plan to stay in system?
Indefinitely, the Countess said. I have my business to attend to. I am led to believe the Imperial Navy wants to have a meeting with me about a task force they wish to assemble in Ikoyi space. And beyond that, whatever is happening with the Emperor and my daughter, I want to be here for. I can't imagine it will be anything less than spectacular when it finally plays out. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
And then there was the rupture data. From it, Mars learned two things. The first was that the scientists of the Free Systems, the loose confederation of star systems that occupied the same space as the Interdependency did today, were enormously advanced, at least in their understanding of the flow and its dynamics. Mars could spend the rest of his natural-born life exploring the data that Cardenia had, with great reluctance, surrendered to him, and still not have scratched the surface of what it had to show him.
There was so much data here, so much understanding of the nature of the flow that had previously been hidden to Mars, that he was genuinely angry at it.
Observations and structures that his father had spent 30 years gathering data to describe were sketched out here in appendices so well understood as to be almost trivial. The idea that all of this information, all of this knowledge, had been flung down a memory hole for 1,500 years briefly brought Mars to a state that could only be described as existential despair. But only briefly, because, after all, he had the data now. What he wanted to do was wallow in it, luxuriate in it, follow the threads of the data at his leisure to see where they led and what they meant, but there was no time for that. Right now, Mars still needed to save billions of people, or at least to see if it was possible. With great reluctance, he put aside nearly all the data to focus on the material that he could see was relevant to the problem at hand. The second thing he learned was that the scientists of the Free Systems were not nearly smart enough. For example, they understood that the flow vibrates, but they didn't understand that it's a liquid. Well, approximately. Trying to describe these underlying mathematical realities of the flow into human language was like trying to describe the contents of a dictionary through dance. The flow, in fact, neither vibrated nor acted like a liquid in any way that the human brain understood either of those two concepts. It was more accurate to say that across several dimensional axes, some of which nested inside others and still others which expressed themselves fractionally, there was a resting frequency to the flow that could be manipulated locally by adding energy to it. And in doing so, flow shoals and streams could theoretically be induced to expand or contract or move in conventional space-time. This is how the Free Systems had collapsed the flow stream out of their part of space, They'd created a hyperspatial equivalent of a resonator, chucked it into the flow stream, and set it off, collapsing that particular stream. That was the rupture. What they hadn't understood was that, dynamically, the flow doesn't act like energy. It acts like a liquid, propagating flow analogs to pressure waves and generating low-pressure voids in turn. In setting off their resonating bomb, the free systems scientists didn't just amplify the flow, they cavitated it, setting off multidimensional voids that shook the flow when they collapsed. The reverberations of the free systems resonator eventually dissipated, affecting nothing more than the flow stream it collapsed. The effects of the cavitation propagated across the flow, destabilizing the portion that correlated to the interdependency and more besides. As far as Mars could see, the math suggested it was still propagating, echoing across the inexpressible terrain of the flow as it did so. All the math was there to see it, the cavitation as well as the vibration. Either the scientists involved in creating the resonator that collapsed the flow stream out of the free states missed it, or they saw it, understood the consequences, and decided to ignore it. Or maybe not ignore it. Maybe they saw when the effects would come back to haunt them, 15 centuries in the future, and decided either to let the future solve the problem, or that by the time it was an issue, they themselves would have figured a way to deal with it. Except they didn't. Because of their actions, the civilization of the free systems collapsed into an anarchy so complete that vast stretches of history and science were lost to their descendants. Because they were lost, not only were these descendants vastly unprepared to deal with the consequences of the rupture, they didn't even know the consequences were coming. Mars wondered if the scientists of the free states had warned their politicians and leaders of the consequences of setting off the rupture, if they were concerned about what they were unleashing onto their children untold generations into the future, or if they were excited about what they were doing and naively optimistic that any consequences it offered would be solved within their lifetimes. Whatever it was, they really messed this one up. "You were right," Mars told Cardenia later as he was trying to explain all of this to her. "People are awful and not to be trusted with knowledge. We were better off in caves, rubbing sticks to make fire." Cardenia smiled at that. Mars's apology had apparently been accepted. Mars's current pessimism about the nature of humanity aside, he had one advantage over the hapless scientists of the free systems, which was that he understood the nature of flow and how its cavitation affected it. At this point, there was no way to halt the effects of the cavitation that had begun 1,500 years ago. The so-called stable flow streams of the interdependency were fated to collapse and wouldn't reform for thousands of years. That deal was done. But the same cavitation that was destroying the stable flow streams was also generating the evanescent streams, creating them as the chaotic results of the cavitation rippled through the medium of the flow. The evanescent streams weren't actually new. The math suggested that they had been appearing for centuries, but they did cluster, appearing more frequently at some times than others. They were currently living through an evanescent cluster that would last for a few decades. Mars predicted other clusters would appear at time intervals that superficially looked random, but were well-defined by the math. "What does that mean for us?" Cardenia asked. "Right now? Not much," Mars admitted. "But if there's a way we can learn how to manipulate these evanescent flow streams and their shoals, it could buy us some time. We wouldn't need to move everyone at once. We could move them a little at a time from one system to the next until they all ended up at end."
"And how long will that take?"
"A couple of hundred years, maybe."
"We can't even get Parliament to agree on a plan when we give them 6 months to do it," Cardenia protested.
"I agree. People are the problem," Mars said.
"How do we solve it then?"
"I don't know. Maybe make them live longer so they have to deal with the consequences of their actions."
"You're an optimist," Cardenia said.
"Apparently." Cardenia giggled, which made Mars happy. Then she asked,
"So how do we control the evanescent flow streams?"
"We make a resonator." Cardenia stopped smiling.
The same thing that created this whole problem. Not the same thing. A similar thing. This one would expand a flow shoal, not collapse it. How long would it take to make one? Not that long. The plans are in the data. The biggest problem is that it requires a ridiculous amount of energy. How much? We could light all of Xi'an with it for months, all released at once. But before we get that far, I need to observe an evanescent flow shoal being created. I need to see whether the actual event fits the data I have. I need at least one accurate data point before I can do anything else. When can you do that? Well, the good news is there's one predicted for the Hub system in 10 days, Mars said. The less good news is it will take me 8 days to get there on the Auvergne, so I need to leave tomorrow. Cardenia frowned at this. This is sudden. I would have told you earlier, but we were fighting, and then we were dealing with Kiva. Right. Cardenia had not been convinced about the Countess Lagos's theory involving her daughter, but Mars convinced her to have her people follow up with the Hubfall investigators about any missing women, more or less matching Kiva's description. I've already informed Chenevere, and he's ready to depart whenever. We just need your clearance for the dock. I could just keep you here, Cardenia said. Let Chenevere handle it all. I want to see this with my own eyes. You can't even see it. Flow shoals are invisible to the eye. You know what I mean. I do. Don't worry. It's 2 weeks in system. You can even write me. The speed of light works. Cardenia pushed at him. Thank you for making me sound clingy. I don't mind clingy. I'm going to remind you that you said that after I send you 16 messages a day. I can't wait. Cardenia got serious again. Do you think we're actually going to do this? This, as in single-handedly rewrite our understanding of flow physics to find a way to manipulate flow shoals in a way never before attempted in order to save billions of people, despite persistent attempts by others to murder us and foil our plans, Mars said. Yes, Cardenia said, that. No, Mars said, because at this point he felt he owed Cardenia honesty. I don't think we're actually going to do this. Then why are we trying? Cardenia asked him. Mars thought about it a moment. I've been thinking a lot about the scientists who set off the rupture, he said, about what they were thinking when they brought it up, about what they were thinking when they built it and then set it off, and what they thought after it all started coming down around them because of the thing they did, you know? I do. I have a chance to help set things right. Not a good chance, I know. A really small chance. One in a million, maybe. It's almost not worth it. But the alternative is to do nothing. It's to let the failures of those long ago scientists keep deciding our fate. If we fail, it's not because we did nothing, Cardenia. We went down fighting. We went down trying to save everyone. Marry me, Cardenia said. Wait, what? Mars said. Marry me, Cardenia repeated. You're serious? Mars said after a moment. Yes. Look, I don't know if this is a great idea. You don't want to marry me then. I didn't say that. Then what is it? Mars tried to find an elegant way to say it and failed miserably. I'm totally below your station, he blurted out. Cardenia burst out laughing. I'm sorry, she said after she stopped. I promised I wouldn't do that to you again. It's all right, Mars said, really.
Thank you.
Are you sure that you want to marry me?
Yes.
Why?
Because you're a good person, Cardenia said. Because you're fighting a fight you know you're going to lose, but you're fighting it with your full strength anyway. Because your awkward matches my awkward. Because if you're not at my station, then no one is. Because these days, the times when I'm happy are the times I get to be with you. Because I should get to have something for myself, and that something is you. Because you don't mind when I eat pie in bed. Because if the end is coming, I want you to know you mattered to me. And because I love you, I really do. Should I go on?
No, Mars said. He smiled. No, I get it. I love you too.
So will you marry me?
Yes, Mars said. Yes, Cardenia Wu Patrick, I will marry you.
Thank you for that, Cardenia said.
For saying I would marry you?
No.
Well, yes, that. Thank you very much for that.
but thank you for saying Cardinia Wu Patrick and not Greyland.
I know who I'm marrying, Mars said.
Good.
Cardinia smiled at Mars, then shook out her hands as if she was relieving an immense amount of stress.
I think I need to sit down now.
Or pee. One of the two, maybe both.
How about one, then the other? Mars said.
Yes, agreed. But before she did either, Cardinia came over and kissed her fiancé. As previously noted, a wild several days for Mars.